This is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussions, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Rams Review Podcast. Jason on hosting duties, Corey's away on vacation, he will be back soon. But obviously, I'm not alone. We've got Jack Bryan. Jack, how are we doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you, mate?
Yep, good, thank you. And returning guest, Chris Smith. Chris, how are we doing, mate?
Yeah, Sam, thanks, Jason. Thanks for inviting me on again.
Not a problem. And probably for the first time this season, it's probably going to be an all smiles podcast. Maybe. But we'll break into the first talking point. And I think anybody, well, I think we spoke about it last week on the episode, Chris. Don't think we expected to go to Peterborough and particularly get anything. But I think, as Andy said, it would have been very Derby-like going to London Road or whatever it's called these days, and coming away with something. And that's exactly what Derby did. I mean, I must admit, I thought the first 10, 15 minutes, pretty much, I've listened to the punditry, I've listened to Rams TV, I've listened to the other commentary, obviously listened to Paul Warne after the game, and he sort of said the same thing. First 10, 15 minutes, we just didn't look at the races. Small tactical tweak in midfield. I don't think that was the only thing, but a small tactical tweak in midfield. And then obviously Peterborough scored, which looked kind of inevitable. Whilst I thought Rooney played pretty well for the majority of the game, he was struggling a little bit, I felt, with a bit of pace going down that left-hand side. It was a tough afternoon for him. And I must admit, when Peterborough went 1-0 up, I thought, oh, here we go. And I was worried about what the state of X or Twitter, I'm still going to call it Twitter, what the state of Twitter was going to be after the game. And there'd have been more worn out kind of comments. But Peterborough from last season, obviously, they were a little bit of a sort of, well, we saw in the playoff semi-finals, I want to say Jekyll and Hyde. I think that's a bit unfair on them, but a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde side. You just don't know what Peterborough side you're going to get. And luckily for Derby yesterday, after them going 1-0 up, Derby got the Peterborough that obviously they would have dreamed of. Me personally, I thought in that opening 15 minutes, all sorts of, you know, the ricochets of the ball, just the rub of the green, if you want to call it that, it just didn't seem to go Derby's way. And no sooner, once Peterborough had scored, it felt like there was a massive change. I mean, obviously getting an equaliser pretty soon after is always a good thing, especially away from home. But it felt like Peterborough just absolutely fell to bits. They didn't really. It was almost as if they were shocked, Chris, that Derby had managed to equalise and got them. And then obviously the sucker punch of what, three goals in space of 22 minutes, was it, or something like that, just absolutely knocked the stuffing out of them. Let's sum up that first half if we can, and obviously there's plenty of detail to go in there. Start with the opening, as I say, that opening 10-15, it didn't look like it was clicking. Peterborough get a goal. And then it just felt like out of nowhere that Derby just managed to get a foothold in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say, I just thought the first 60 minutes was just wide open. I don't think we were as bad as we have been. So I don't think it's fair to say that, you know, Peterborough were all over us, or we were, but certainly you're right. You know, in that first 15 minutes, Rooney was certainly struggling against his guy, and you know, that was always going to be the source of a problem. But you know, Derby, it was just wide open. I think that would be the concern for Warne. It was less the fact that we were getting swarmed over, and more the fact that, you know, both teams seemed to be cutting through the other with relative ease. And you know, whilst, you know, again, I don't agree that we were getting murdered, but it was no surprise at all when their winger sort of, you know, got the run on Rooney, crossed, and Clark Harris scored, and just the and what happened after that was just, I don't think anybody saw that coming, really, did they? And but you I say Peterborough, I think when they have been, they're perennially their top six League One, bottom six Championship, aren't they? And have been for a number of years. And I think all their successes, it's never been built on a solid defence, has it? They've always pulled a 30 goal striker from somewhere, and they've always had fast wingers and played a good style of football. And I think, the Sheff Wed game that you referenced a second ago, Jason, the soft underbelly was there for all to see there. And Derby, we literally took them apart. And it was nice to see a bit of luck for a change, with the deflected. But as I say, the first goal that Waggy scored, he actually had one in the first 5 minutes, almost identical, where he completely missed the ball.
He absolutely fluffed it, didn't he? Yeah.
But as I say, so this is what I'm saying. I think it wasn't, a one-way traffic by any means. And but yeah, I mean, w once that. For that second cashing header went in, we just took them apart. It was and again, I'd say, I know we talk, maybe we'll go on to it, but I think the pleasing part was that, Derby being Derby, even at 4-1, it's never over till it's over, is it? And but they didn't really, really lay a glove on us in the second half, did they? There was no sort of intense pressure or no back to the wall. And I think, I think Warren probably be as happy with seeing it out as we did in the second half, as he was with the blitz in the first half.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Derby's professionalism in that second half, they nullified Peterborough quite a bit. But yeah, we'll move on to that in a minute. Jack, as we said there, it's always important for to if you know if obviously away from home, if you're going to concede, if you can get back into it as soon as possible. And it was Chris is right. I think yeah, it was pretty open flowing in that first half. The one thing for me that from what I could see was Peterborough, the way that certainly Peterborough charged forward, I think is the way that Paul Warne wants Derby to play. But there was it, this is a slight negative, and I really didn't want to bring one up, but it is a slight negative. I thought at times, apart from obviously those four goals, there was at times where Derby's transition, we just, I don't know if they're instructed to just slow it down a little bit. And just take the sting out of it a little bit, just try and grab shape and build away through him that way. But I thought there was a few times where we got the turn of the we turned possession over, and we were just jog well we weren't even jogging. It was apart from Liam Thompson, who was just buzzing around like a shit fly all game really, which we'll come on to. But yeah, that was the one. Every time Peterborough come forward, I was like, we don't look particularly solid at the back, in my opinion. Apart from, I thought Nelson was incredible on Saturday. I really do. I think he was absolutely everywhere. Definitely his best game in a Derby shirt so far. But at the end of the day, we are here to talk about at the end of the day the positives. And Derby scored four goals in that what 20-minute spell. A whole mixture of goals. An hat trick for Waghorn, which was great. Some not that first one, good ball in from Thompson, nice little flick, peeled away from his man. Obviously, same with the corner routine. I mean, what's that? Two or three we scored from set pieces this season. I can't remember really doing that very. We've set, other than physical dead ball. Obviously, we've had a couple of dead ball specialists in our teams over the years. But so from that was great. Say, I think everybody. Of a Derby persuasion was hoping Mendes Lang wouldn't shoot from 35 yards out, but he hit it. He did hit it perfect, really. I mean, obviously it's not for Waghorn to be able to intercept. And then that third goal is actually I'll give. I think it was Connor Washington who gets the knockdown from the original cross. I think that was a great bit of defense, bit of play, to be honest. And again, he impressed, although. I mean, we've seen some strikers who can't finish at Derby, but I've got a feeling Connor Washington's going to he's going to take that mantle quite well by the end of the season because I'm not confident with his finishing. I have to say he had one or two chances again on Saturday, but all in all, Jack, four good goals absolutely blew Peterborough away. They didn't really know what to do, and it's the first time that we've seen that from this Derby side. I know we put three past Burton, but I mean that game could have gone very, very differently if Burton could put the chances away. But a bit like Chris said, other than their goal, I think they did they hit the bar in the second half.
There was a about 70 minutes. There was a Ricky J. Jones had a kind of looping effort that looked
That was
like it
the
was going to
one.
go
Yeah, that was it. It
over
hit the
Wild
bar, didn't
Smith,
it? Yeah.
and yeah, hit the bar. Paul Warne said after the match that that was a moment where he kind of knew it was going to be our day.
Yeah, well, yes.
I mean, I'm thinking we're already 4-1 up. You, it's kind of it's been our day for the last hour, certainly.
Yeah, no, I
But
would agree. But like Chris said, we
yeah, it
limited them, didn't
was.
we? We limited them.
Yeah, I think. I mean, just going back to what you were saying when you're picking out that negative, the what a position that we're in today, sat here to be able to go apart from the four goals. You know, when are we able to do that as Derby fans? You know, there were obviously bits to work on, but there's some good play. I mean, the finish for Waghorn's hat trick was nice. I would say. I mean, on Washington, what you said about his finishing, absolutely. That does seem to be a concern. But what's good with Washington, I've noticed, and this was noticed this last week as well. There seems to be a bit of link up between him and Waghorn, like that little kind of knockdown that you were on about. So that they seem to be combining in a, you know, a decent fashion already, considering they've played together for only, you know, handful of games. I think, you know, whether when, you know, we equalised, were we galvanised by going behind, or did Peterborough just get complacent and end up collapsing? That's, you know, that's to be debated. But I mean, we're getting set piece threat, as you say. Waghorn is leading the line effectively now. I would say he looked good from what I saw of highlights. And I mean, what is it? Something like 37 minutes per goal he's averaging based on this, which obviously isn't sustainable, because
Well, you
I
never
saw somebody
know.
say,
If it is, then we are winning the league. But yeah, no, I would agree with that.
yeah, I mean, does Craig Forsyth get some sort of commission, do you think? Scouting commission here? Because, I mean, if that happens, then Craig Forsyth needs a scouting job straight away, for a recruitment job for getting his mate involved. But yeah, I mean, it was a solid performance. I think, you know, in that second half, as you both said, the way they kind of managed to stifle Peterborough will be very encouraging for Paul Warne. There was obviously that kind of 90th minute goal, wasn't there, from Poku? But by that point, it was done and dusted, really. Darren Ferguson, of course, had a moment, didn't he, as well? That was interesting. But yeah, I think Martin Waghorn, it's just a very, very good display from him. With, as I said, the finish for the hat trick stands out to me. But I think Liam Thompson, as you mentioned briefly, he looks a different player this season. And Jake Rooney, yeah, he did have a bit of a tough time against Mason Clark and his pace. But I think, you know, once they did make that tweak, I mean, Warne said it. He improved after that tweak, and I do wonder whether, especially with the right wing backs both injured, we are going to see Jake Rooney maybe get a run in the team at right back whilst playing his back four. Because, you know, I'd spoke start of pre-season and last end of last season about kind of long-term strategy and what we were going to see from Derby there. Is, you know, it'd be nice to think that we could have a couple of young players like Thompson or Rooney, you know, getting game time and developing. And I think Liam Thompson, certainly whilst Max Bird is out, is going to have that chance, because every time he's playing at the moment, he's impressive.
Yeah, no, I would agree, and yeah, we'll move on to Liam Thompson in a second. But yeah, just to sort of wrap it up, it was a bit of a shame that obviously we did concede. But I mean, this is suspicion of offside. I've not really seen an angle that kind of proves it either way, to be honest. So it's hard to see. And then I suppose really the other two talking points from the game was Peterborough's skip mascot. I mean, He must be getting paid some money, because to make yourself look an idiot like that wandering around, I mean, that's not for me. And then, of course, right after the goal, was Wildsmith hitting an imaginary post or something, because he went down clutching his head, and I've seen replays. It doesn't look like anybody's anywhere near him, but a nice little bit of time wasting, the dark arts, if you will. I took the sting out of them, because we know Peterborough have always been a side that can score goals. There's no way about it, no two ways about that. So I quite liked, just trying to stop them from pressing on us straight away. So now I'm all for that tactic. Obviously, I'd be screaming if it was against us the other way, but at the end of the day, when it's your own team doing it, of course it's allowed. So yeah, I mean, there's a couple of questions that are kind of posed now after the game that I'm going to come on to in a bit. But so, as I said, Liam Thompson, Curtis Nelson stood out for me. I thought he marshalled the defence quite well. It's quite happy. When I say Jake Rooney, I mean, Clark is quick. There's no two ways about it. He is quick. But I like the way that he put a few tackles in. He come away with the ball a couple of times. Linked up quite well, I thought, with Mendes Lang, who I'm not sure about him at the moment this season. It looks like when he's. I mean, I look back at last season and some of the times where he'd take on a man and he'd get past them. It just doesn't look like he does that. He kind of like runs into them. A little bit, or he has been running into them a little bit. Almost gives off a can't be arsed attitude a little bit. But I'm not saying that he that's what he's thinking. But I've not been quite as impressed with him beginning of this season as I was last. But hopefully, they're getting used to new players. That he is being moved around a little bit. So you've got to give him his due. But yeah, the Liam Thompson, Chris, again, obviously somebody who you know quite well. As you mentioned last time he was on the podcast. I mean, I don't particularly think there's a great deal of difference in the way that he's played this year to what we saw him in that championship season. We know he's got energy. We know he's got sort of that thing in his locker. I mean, what it was that Paul Warne didn't fancy about him last year, we'll never know. Also went out on loan, couldn't really get into a struggling Scunthorpe side. I know we're only talking two games here, but if Martin Waghorn hadn't scored an hat trick, he'd have got man of the match again yesterday on Saturday, in my opinion, for two games running. I suppose the only thing to say, more of the same, and it's nice. He has got that little bit of energy. He was utilised out on the left as well a little bit, and he got down the bar line a couple of times, is that you can't fault his determination. You can't fault his effort. Obviously puts the ball in for the first goal, of Waghorn's. I mean, obviously we're going to talk transfers in a little bit, and I'm sure Derby are still looking for that kind of attacking minded midfielder to come in. But a bit like what Jack said there, I think it'd be, unless he has, the next couple of games in his absolute stinker, or he's out injured, it'd be very harsh on him on what we've seen in those last two games. That he's just as deserved as anybody in that squad for a starting position at the moment, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he played pretty much most of the pre-season games, but he was playing weirdly at left wing back for the majority of that. But I would say in those games, he played. I mean, I saw a couple of them, and he definitely looked like he'd stepped up. You could just tell he just had a different, just carried himself a little bit differently. He was winning more kind of duels than he was losing. And I think, I've got to give Warne a little bit of credit here because he's just playing him further up the pitch. So I think when he's played previously, he's been playing kind of too deep. And I think also there's that little thing as well that when you're a young player, you come in the side, you see this all the time. Like you get people who are playing in the under 21s who are dribbling past three people and hitting 40-yard crossfield passes and smashing it in the top corner. But then when they come in the first team, they'll just do the easy ball. They'll just play it 5 yards to a Hourihane or an experienced player because you just want to get those passes completed and you don't want to make a mistake. And I think kind of what I'm seeing this season is a combination of things where he just seems to have something's clicked with him. Confidence is obviously massive for all footballers, whether you're young or whether you're 35. So I think he's definitely his confidence is up. He's playing further forward, and Warne's obviously gave him some license to just cause havoc. And because and he's obviously got the he's got the Duracell batteries, hasn't he? With where he's literally up and down, up and down. I mean that one where in the second half where he basically tackled somebody in our box to stop an attack, and then shifted it to Iran, went charging down the line, and ran pretty much the length of the pitch, and kind of won us a corner. And he was sort of sat on his backside, sort of catching his breath, and everybody was like, Tomo, Tomo, just just amazing, really. So yeah, it's great to see. But I think the other bit as well is that he, we said it last week, and I think it's been well documented. I think one of the big problems in the first few games was that all the midfielders were the same, weren't they? And in terms of Bird, Corey Smith, and Hourihan, and I think I literally said it to Corey last week, your Corey last week, that they're all the same player. And I think dropping Liam in there, it's just a different dynamic. And he's obviously relishing the fact that he's in the team, and he's taking his chance. And if you compare it to someone like Sibley, how many times have we seen Sibley kind of come on, score a screamer, or do a brilliant little cameo, and then when he gets his chance to start, he doesn't take his opportunity. And to be fair to Liam, he's taking it with both hands. And yeah, say, I mean, if he carries on as he's going, I mean, he is literally like a new signing.
Yeah, I thought that when he come in and obviously made his debut in that championship season. I mean, he got in that side under Rooney, and he was in there for a fair run. And then for whatever reason, he just hasn't been favoured just recently. But I would agree, Sibley is a very good example of that. I mean, to some extent, Jason Knight's a very obviously I know he's no longer a Derby player, but he's a very similar comparison. Now, don't get me wrong, he would always put his shift in, he was always put his energy in. But we always said on the podcast, the one thing that probably stopped him from being, a Premier League signing rather than going to Bristol City was that he didn't really score and he didn't really set them up. Whereas, obviously Thompson, he's got his assist already on Saturday. So, you've got to give him his due. And you're right, he is like a new signing. And speaking of new signings, obviously we got to saw Derby's two Tyreses. As Paul Warne said, I mean, he could have put his boots on for the last 15 minutes. It's all easy to play when you're 4-1 up and coming on. It's we didn't really we couldn't really see. It was what? It was a 15-minute cameo from the pair of them. They look busy. They look like they want to come in. They want to impress. Obviously, the lad from Forest is a permanent sign-in. We've got blogs out on our website. We've spoke to Reading podcast. We spoke to a Plymouth podcast about his last couple of loan spells. Obviously, all the, you listen to any Forest fan's opinion, and he was rubbish. But that's because obviously they've sold him to us. And let's be honest, he probably isn't a Premier League player. But for Derby, somebody in that midfield, like you said there, Chris, it's having a different option. Is the what the second player that we've signed in that age bracket that Paul Warne wanted to bring players in? So he's one that's obviously going to be a part, probably one that they were chasing with Max Bird's injury. Obviously, we would presume now Max Bird's going to be with us until January at the least. And I think it was on Twitter, somebody said, I know it's very hard to t a very hard question to answer at the minute, but does Max Bird wander straight back into this side, and is not having Max Bird at Derby as big of a loss as some fans thought would think? Because I think, like you said, the balance just felt that little bit better. I think it's Bird and Hourihan more than anything. They're two players that do the very, very similar sort of job. obviously, if we could keep hold of Max Bird because of his age, he's gonna obviously Oran's not gonna be at Derby forever because of his age. But I think they're a bit too similar, and I think they both try and do the same job. And I think, as I say, you get a bit more of a balance in that midfield. It does make a massive difference. So I think it does beg the question about Max Bird, and does his future lie at Derby from a point of view of would we keep him rather than we have to sell him? And then I think the other thing, kind of crossing it over into the transfer market, we've got a week left to go. Sibley, is his time at Derby up? James Collins, I think, is probably the biggest talking point. Is his future at Derby looking slightly under threat? Obviously, Barkhuizen is another one. Is his? I know he's not fit, but so it's hard to say. But where I think we said it in a pre-season pod preview. Where does Barkhuizen really fit in at Derby anymore? So, Chris, coming into the final week of the transfer window, as we've just been discussing, there's a few Derby players' names that could be potential on and out. He said that he's obviously in his press match conference that he's obviously still looking for some in. We're what, seven, well, less than 7 days, 5 days away now from the end. If no more business is done from an incoming point of view, would you mark that as a pretty decent window? Even though I think we do need one or two, but if Friday rolls around and we've got what we've got between now and January, do you think we're going to be able to cope? And the second part of that is, out of Derby players that are still lingering around, do you expect to see any movement of the first team squad moving out at all?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose cash-in's the big one, isn't it? And there's a few moving parts with that because I think the last rumor I saw was that one of the sticking points is that they don't want him to come back on loan to us. So obviously, if he goes, then he might be gone. So I think everyone's assuming that if he goes, he'll be loaned back. But I'm not sure unless Brighton sort of change their stance. From what I mean, again, I'm only telling you what I'm seeing. I haven't got any ITK knowledge, but so obviously if he goes, then definitely we need to replace him. Certainly, Rooney at the moment, Rooney's all right in a centre half, but he's all right as a centre half, and obviously he's covering right back. Fozzie again is great as a centre half, but we can't really ask him to play another 50 games again. Sonny Bradley, has not become a bad player overnight, but he's definitely finding his feet. So if cash goes, got to replace him. If cash goes, does that give us some cash, literally, to go and maybe get the big centre forward that, maybe he does go and get Smith from Sheff Wed or, somebody else who we've been looking at who maybe wages were a bit of a stretch or something, I don't know. He's mentioned himself a few times that there's players who he spoke to earlier in the window who might be coming round again. We've only got one loan, I think, at the moment. So there's four or five loan spots still sat there. A tricky one, really. I mean, again, I think what we have to be careful of is, whilst last week we were all doom and gloom and it's all horrendous, I think we have to be careful, again, that we don't sort of all now start thinking because we won one game, everything is all, kind of rosy in the garden. As I say, we're talking about Liam, and he without question, he's played two phenomenal games. But 2 weeks ago, he wasn't even in the conversation. So I still think we need that creative number 10. Collins. You wonder, does Warne really fancy him with Waghorn and Washington clicking? When, to be fair to Collins, I don't think he's played even that badly this season. But there's just something not quite. You just wonder whether it's not happening for him. And now these two are the first choice. Is he going to get the arse even and sort of, want to move? Barkhuizen, I think, is a great player, but Warne doesn't seem to fancy him. I don't know. We sort of dropped him last season when he was flying. And where does he play? I'm not sure. Sibley, I don't know whether Warne's gave up on him. Where does he play? You know, his best run was when he played at left back, and he's obviously not a left back. So I don't know. So I think, you know, I definitely think there's a fair few moving parts. You know, the right back thing, maybe we do loan one. I mean, say Jake Rooney's there at the moment. Corey Smith can obviously play there, but then if he moves across, then you need a midfielder. So somebody needs to come in into that kind of dearth somewhere. You know, we've obviously have got the two new lads, so we haven't seen enough of them really to pass comment. But Fornar on first glance looks like what we need. You know, kind of a bit of energy and physicality up and down the pitch. Yeah, and John Jules looks yeah, a bigger version of Dobbin, really. Like, definitely seemed to on Saturday, even in his brief cameo, a lot more physicality perhaps than you know, almost like the best parts of Dobbin and Asula kind of rolled into one, you know, on first glance. So still, you know, maybe think he might go for that out and out warhorse target man, perhaps. You know, certainly with the amount of set pieces and the quality of them we've got, you know, you can see that come in. So yeah, you know, I think probably I think you'll see a couple of three come in this week, and again, I won't be surprised if you saw one or two go out as well.
No, I would agree. I mean, certainly the Collins one, it's not, I don't think he's particularly done anything wrong, but we say it about other players, you know, if you're not going to be in the squad and not have the impact that you're there to do, it's all well and good running the channels, which he's not a striker that can run the channel, you know, run the channels. He's a 6 yard man. We've not really seen him sit there, to be honest. Obviously, in pre-season, it kind of worked, but obviously the injury to Ward, it means, does that just take away Collins's arsenal a little bit? Even though Mendes Lango put balls in, you know, obviously Thompson can put balls in, but it does seem like obviously Ward's come out of the team, and so has Collins, really, which is a little bit of a surprise. But again, Paul Warne, I think you're right. Does he fancy him? It's not his signing. It's not his player. I'd say I don't particularly think he's done massively anything wrong, but if you listen to Warne and he wants these energy workhorses, is James Collins that kind of a striker? For me, no. And I suppose it'll all depend on if there's anybody else around, but I would agree with you, Chris. I think if there's anybody out there that he can bring in that's, you know, 6.5 foot and can just stick him up front, while it might not be particularly pretty football to watch at times, I think if he can get him in there, get that type of player in, then I could see Collins going, if I'm honest. At the end of the day, we are short up there, so you can't just let him go and not replace him. But yeah, I think if there's an option to replace that, and actually, I think that's probably same as any of the first team squad, really. We'd have to replace. I don't think we've got anybody particularly that we could afford to lose and just go, oh, don't worry about it. We don't need to worry. So yeah, it'd be interesting. Jack, what are your thoughts on the final 5 or so days of Derby's transfer window? And same question. Do you think if nothing happens, this squad's capable of having Derby where they want to be, certainly up until the January window?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? I mean, on what we've seen so far this season, I'm thinking it'd be a little bit short, but a couple of, you know, a couple of good additions this week, and who, you know, who knows? I think Collins, yeah, we could well see him go. There's, you know, various rumours swirling with another attempt at getting Michael Smith, or you know, three EFL clubs being in for Johnson, Clark, Harris, and people linking us with him. Now, I don't know how Derby could afford that, to be honest, at the moment, if they, you know, if they weren't going to spend on transfer fees. But, you know, it is clear that Collins, you know, isn't Warne's ideal striker by any stretch, isn't it? I mean, as you both say, he's not really done anything wrong, but it's maybe just a bit of almost wrong place, wrong time as well in that sense. I think, you know, you think about it, he's 32 now, James Collins. From his perspective, he's got a few years left of his career. Does he want to be coming on and playing the last 10 minutes, last 15 minutes, and that being it? Or would he rather, you know, move and get some more game time? Would be one question. On the right back situation, we could, I could see a loan coming in, but anything more than a, short term loan to January would surprise me, to be honest, because what are Warden Wilson out for about 2 months? If you buy someone or loan someone in for the season or something, then you've suddenly got three right backs. So unless they can go and play other positions as well, they need to be smart. So I think that'd be a short term move. On Sibley, he picked up another injury, didn't he? He was out again on Saturday. He recovered from one and then picked up another one. So even if there has been interest in him, which I don't know if there has or not, could that could affect things. But yeah, I think the two new lads seem good little additions to the squad. You've got Fauna, who's another body in the midfield, that right age bracket with the energy. And John Jules, I mean, the big kind of problem with him has been his injury record. But he's a very good player. Despite not getting that many goals the last couple of seasons, he's been rated very highly. And yeah, so that one's a loan to January, isn't it? Which is, I think, smart business again, because if he can't stay fit, then they send him back, obviously. If he's flying, you extend that loan and then he's out of contract next summer and you try and get him at that point. So yeah, is there, if there's a couple of deals out there, I could see it. I mean, cash in at this point, if he's going to go, then Derby will obviously already be looking at placements. There was links with one centre back from Rotherham, whose name I can't remember, which is bad. But that was, yeah, so Brighton, £3 million. Could Derby reinvest that? Probably at some point. Would they reinvest that all at once? Or, would they be able to reinvest all of that into the playing squad? No to both of those. But, cash in again, his contract's up come the summer. If Derby keep him this summer, then, they need to be trying to tie him down. If he's not going to sign a new contract, then even with only a few days left to go and questions over who they could replace him with, would they be tempted to sell for the right money to make sure they get something if it was clear he wasn't going to sign a new deal for the club's finances longer term? That's, I guess, the thing I'm pondering there. But yeah, I think it's been a decent window. As I say, the long-term plan aspect of it kind of has been a little bit absent. I mean, the best player really that we've seen so far has been one who they weren't intended to bring in Michael, which says something. But yeah, I expect a couple of players in this week. And I mean, certainly if Collins goes, we'll have a striker. There's no way they won't do that. We can't have, what would it be? It would just be Washington and Waghorn, I think, wouldn't it? Is there another striker in that squad?
Well, obviously the new lad JJ
Oh,
would
yeah.
be in there, but
Sorry, it's John Jules. The
yeah, is
other
it?
thing with that, actually, is Warren said when he signed Waghorn, he saw him as more of a 10, didn't he?
Yeah.
So he didn't even intend to play Waghorn as the out-and-out striker. So, even if Collins doesn't go, maybe he wants someone else in and to drop Waghorn that little bit deeper. I don't know. He talked about on Saturday, he put Waghorn on the defensive midfielder, didn't he? And then that's when the space started to open up. So yeah, whether he wants a, as you said, about a big, 6 foot 6 sort of target man almost, to kind of knock the ball down and then have players in and around, and Whitehorn being one of those, slightly more central role. I could see that as well. But yeah, Friday.
I think that's what he's going for. I mean, he had Freddie Ladapo, didn't he, at Rotherham, who was that
Yes.
sort of who was that sort of player. So no, I could fully see us going down that route. But I'm sure it will be a busy old 5 days. And if there's seven signings, which I don't think there's going to be, but if there is seven signings, then we'll have to do an emergency transfer deadline podcast. But yeah, I don't expect that this year. But certainly a couple of extra bodies in there, and I think you're on what we've touched on, dependent on. I think Max Bird was one of the. I think they were looking to get him out this summer, if I'm honest, to try and cash in on him. But obviously, not going to be able to do that now with injuries. So you at that point, I don't think anybody's going to sort of be offering too much money for him in January. Kind of the same thing with Cashin. If we can keep him at bay this summer, great. But then the clock's ticking, and at the end of the day, it's in my opinion, it's what's more worth? Is it a couple of million pounds now, or keeping them until they're free? Are they gonna earn us more money by potentially getting us promoted? That's the bigger question. I certainly wouldn't be entertaining if they're both at a contract in the summer. I wouldn't be entertaining anything about letting them. If we can keep hold of them, don't let them go in January. What's the point? Unless they really start to throw the toys out of the pram, and then obviously at that point, if they don't want to physically play for the team, then they can definitely go. You don't want no bad eggs in the camp. So it's going to be an interesting 5 days. We'll see how it goes. And as I say, on the next podcast, we'll tie up and have a bit of a full review of all the transfer activity.
All right, so let's go ahead and take a look now at Derby County's next game, which is against Bolton Wanderers. Joining me today to talk all things Bolton Wanderers and give us some insights into them is Mark Isles. He's the chief football writer at the Bolton News. Mark, thanks for joining the Rams Review podcast. How the heck are you?
Not too bad, mate. Looking forward to the game.
So, Mark, I look at Bolton Wanderers. As of the time of recording, they're sitting in second place, 4 games played. 3 wins and a loss. What are the expectations for the club this season? Is it because Bolton is, have been in the Premier League? They really should not be in League One as the size of the club that they are. Is this a season where they're gearing up that they want to go top two, or they playoffs as a minimum? What's kind of the expectations surrounding the club this season?
I think they put a lot of pressure on themselves by saying outwardly they want to be promoted automatically this season. I mean, last year they got to the playoffs, near miss against Barnsley, but I think the general consensus at this end is that they weren't quite ready to step up to the Championship. The finances weren't quite in place. The squad wasn't quite evolved enough. There's still some question marks as far as the squad's concerned. And we're speaking now, there's a week left to the transfer deadline. Cam Bolton had a bit more quality to ease those fears, maybe. But, the club, the owners, the manager, the players are all talking as if top two is their aim. So expectation is always going to be there with Bolton. As you mentioned, historically, they've only had 15 or so seasons outside the top two divisions in English football. Like Derby, we consider ourselves being a top flight club because of the trophies and the history and the stars we've seen before. But, we all fall on hard times, and that's been the case for Bolton this last few years.
So, Mark, talk to me about Bolton's season so far. They kind of started like a house on fire, winning all these games. And then all of a sudden last weekend, I looked at it, Bolton nil, Wigan 4, Wigan go to the Reebok, which I'll still call it the Reebok because that is the iconic name of the stadium. And they win 4-0. What happened in the loss to Wigan? Because it's a bit of an anomaly the way they started the season.
I wish I could tell you, Corey, to be honest, mate. It was a real bolt from the blue for me. I didn't really see it come in. They'd done very well over the first 3 games and cup game included in that as well. Beat Lincoln, beat Fleetwood, beat Cheltenham very comfortably and did so in kind of third gear, really. But they didn't even get into first against Wigan. They look lethargic. They look slow. Nothing like the passion you'd want to see in a local derby anyway. And Wigan took full advantage. I mean, obviously they got a result against Derby. We can see Wigan are going to be a decent team this season, albeit they started on -8 points. But Bolton were just not at the races. And we hope it's a one-off. We hope it's a bad day at the office. But it certainly raised a few alarm bells as to the quality of the squad and also the mentality within the squad, whether or not they've got the fight needed for the big occasions against the big teams. And that's the main worry against, for Bolton fans at the moment, is that they're great against the smaller teams. They can wipe them. They can pass them off the planet. Can they do it against the promotion candidates a la Derby? And that'll be a really big test for Bolton.
So, Mark, talk to me about, I agree. I think this is a game of two heavy hitters, and Derby's previous match was against Peterborough, which is another, kind of team that you're thinking is kind of going to have some sort of impact in that top six come the end of the year. So kind of a tough stretch of games. Mark, talk to me about Ian Evatt, the former Derby County defender. Has gone on to have a great career. He's kind of transitioned into management. I think he's took Bolton up from League Two, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
And is kind of the, has he made a rod for his own back by them wanting to get top two, or is he just a supremely confident person? Is he under, are the owners going to look to not fire him? Obviously, if they lose to Derby, it's a bit too early in the season to be talking about that. But, you know, is he on a hot seat or is he on a pretty safe seat so far? What are your thoughts on Ian Evatt?
He's a very interesting character. Very interesting character. I think he looks back at his schooling at Derby and say, you know, that kind of made him as a person. He played, he came through under Jim Smith, the great Jim Smith, of course. And he says he has those kind of old school values that Jim Smith had, but he's married them alongside a lot of forward thinking, a lot of modern kind of approach. He idolizes Pep Guardiola and that school as well. So his coaching philosophy has always been very modern. And he's always had quite a lot of plaudits. He's only been a manager for 5 years, but he took Barrow into the Football League. As you mentioned there, he took Bolton in his first season with a squad of two or three players, suddenly, you know, took them out of League Two at the first time of asking, solidified things last season, and then got him into the playoffs. So it's been gradual progression all the way along. And so, in a sense, he has made a rod for his own back because every year he has got better. And so they finished fifth last season. They will be expected to improve on that. And he's a very, he says what he thinks. He wears his heart on his sleeve. That's not always for everybody. He's quite an emotional fella. Sometimes he says things that gets him in trouble. Sometimes I'll be writing a story with gritted teeth and thinking, God, I wish you hadn't have said that, Elvo, because, you know what the reaction is going to be like. But you can never accuse him of hiding away. If he thinks his team are good enough, and he does think his team is good enough to get promotion, he will say it. He'll put his neck on the block. And whilst that does stand him up to the odd bit of derision from the opposition fans, I think the Bolton fans really identify with it. A lot of them love it, love that kind of that way about him. So, he said he's looking for top two. No question about it. He's not hiding that fact at all. He says his team is good enough. There are, without question, question marks over that. There are people even in the Bolton camp that say, are Bolton actually good enough to finish top two? The Wigan results obviously brought a lot of them to the fore. But Evo's not going to hide away. I think he'll carry on predicting that top two.
I think with predictions like that, and then being a victim of your own success, sometimes that can work against you for periods of time. Mark, talk to me about the squad. I'm looking at the squad here, and there is one familiar face in Cameron Jerome that is kind of in and around. Who are the star men to look for in this Bolton team? What players, if Paul Warren is obviously listening to this podcast, which players do Derby need to target to shut down to try to get a result? Who are the star men in this team?
I mean, Paul Warren's always had a very decent record against Ian Evatt's Bolton back when to his Rotherham days. And obviously last season as well, some good performances, certainly at Pride Park. It's that kind of high energy football that does tend to cause Bolton problems. Now, when Bolton are playing at their best, they're very much possession-based, very expansive. They'll make the pitch extremely big. And when Bolton are playing well, you usually find that Ricardo Santos, the centre-half, is the man in the middle, is dictating things from the back, is very good one-on-one defender. So they leave him pretty much isolated against any strikers that come about so they can get men forward. You're then talking about your wing backs. Bolton need their wing backs to be playing well for the team to function. This season, Randall Williams has impressed me. He came from Championship last season at Hull City, where he wasn't playing much, but he's got a decent background. Played very well at Exeter at this level as well. He's starting to come into the fore and be a decent, reliable outlet on the left. Bolton had Connor Bradley from Liverpool last season on loan, and he was a big miss. There was a lot of question marks as to what the team was going to do without him. But Josh Dacres-Cogley is coming from Tranmere. Again, he's hit the ground running, looked very impressive in those early games. And then I suppose everybody always looks at Dion Charles, scored 20-odd goals last season for Bolton. had done so before at this level for Accrington Stanley. He's broken into the Northern Ireland team now. He's suddenly the man that a few people are looking at. We're seeing Stoke, we're seeing a few other championship clubs that are looking and maybe just thinking, is he able to step up the extra level, maybe a bit before the transfer window is out? There's a few. I mean, they're not really a team of superstars, if truth be told. I wouldn't even say they're a team of household names, but they all can get a job done. You mentioned Jerome there. Obviously, he's got a fantastic career, but he's barely played a minute for Bolton. So they're a pretty even squad, and they can be swapped out. There's a lot of rotation there, which is, I suppose, as the season goes on, that could be a big strength.
And Mark, when you look at it, you know, it does seem like Bolton are more of a sum of their parts rather than some individual quality, which is real nice. Where are the and I saw Deion Charles got sent off and I was counting the games because I was like, that's going to be three games. And then unfortunately, looks like he'll be back for Derby. Where are the strengths of this Bolton team? Where can they really hurt Derby?
I think if they're allowed to dominate possession, Bolton will cause problems. And their Achilles heel comes against teams who have an effective high press. Teams that don't allow, particularly in the wing-back positions, but because if you allow Bolton's wing-backs to get forward, they are going to cause you problems. But Bolton dominate position, they choke teams out effectively with the ball. And I think Wigan probably pointed the way to how to unlock Bolton. Certainly in the first half, their front four were excellent. The pressing was absolutely superb. They gave Bolton no space at all to play through midfield. They don't have a mass amount other than Santos of physicality. So I think against stronger teams, they can be bullied effectively. And it's up to Bolton to kind of find a way around that, to pass around that. And that's what they've struggled to do. That's what a lot of us are asking at this end is, can they be brave enough to go and take on that high press and pass the way through and find unlock those problems? At the moment, you know, they do struggle against that sort of team. So I would imagine that a Paul Warne side who, you know, he prides himself on having energy, you know, his team is nothing if not a willing runners all the time. He won't accept laziness. That's the kind of team that I think Bolton will struggle against. And so this is a big, big test for Bolton, no question about it.
And Mark, last question for you before I let you go. Obviously, with respect to your position, I'm not going to push you for a score prediction, as I do most guests on the podcast. How are you viewing this game? Like I said in the early part, I think both of us can sit here and say we would expect both Derby and Bolton to be playing meaningful games towards the end of this season, be in that time of top six. This is a big game for both sides, isn't it? How are you viewing it?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, looking at the opening results, Bolton are obviously in a slightly more comfortable position. I think, you know, Derby have had a few defeats that maybe are a little bit unexpected, but I pick Bolton Derby as my top two for the start of the season. And I'm not going to change my mind at this point. I think Paul Warne knows how to get out of this league. He knows what type of player is required to get out of this league. And whilst kind of the football snob may turn his nose up at sometimes, I think with Derby, he's got a chance of enforcing his kind of the practicalities, the energy, the high press, the hard work that he always puts in his team, but actually be able to sprinkle that with a bit of quality as well, because he's got the budget to work with at Derby. And last season, obviously, he was a bit hamstrung, came in, didn't have his own squad, had to kind of make it up and mend as he went along. But this summer, he's been able to bring in his own players. So we're expecting this to be a Derby that gets promoted this season, no question. So for me, this is a battle of two teams that should be one and two at the end of the season, based on the budget they've got and the quality they've got in the squad. Anything less than that, I think, is a failure, to be completely honest. There's possibly more pressure on Derby, as I mentioned there, with the early results. Had they not got a win last weekend, as we're talking about it, then maybe there'd be a bit more pressure on him. But I think there's great expectations on both fronts. And Bolton, as I say, they need to answer some questions at this end. There are people saying you can't go and match a team like Derby match them stride for stride and enforce your game plan on theirs as opposed to the other way around. So this it's a big test on both sides. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a really, really big game.
I'm excited for it too, Mark. And I will take your, you know, I'll take you up on that. One finishes one, one finishes two in the league. I don't care who finishes who, as long as we both finish above that dotted line for, and then we can talk again next season in the championship. Mark Isles, the chief football writer at the Bolton News. Mark, thanks for spending the last few minutes with me to chat about Bolton. I'm looking forward to the game. I know you are as well. And I hope we can catch up at the reverse fixture.
Top man. Cheers, Corey, man. Take care.
Final couple of points on the podcast this week. Obviously, we said it, like you said it last week, Chris, with Corey, coming into two very tough away games. We've managed to come out with 3 points out of one of them. We've got to now go up to Lancashire, and obviously a team that's been, well, slapped by Wigan and a local, their local rivals the week before, should have. I mean, I don't know if you saw the highlights. Obviously, they played Burton at the weekend, and it was a 1-1 draw. And Bolton missed a chance from about 4 yards out. Well, I say missed a chance. The keeper pulls off an absolute wonder save, but he's got no. He should be firing that into the back of the net. So a bit of a frustrating one for them at Burton. So after what had been a solid start really from Bolton, and then. You know, they've kind of wobbled in the last two, and then everybody said that, and quite rightly, Derby have had a pretty rough start, but they've won the last two, the three, you know, what we're in sixth, seventh, 3 points off the top. I know the league doesn't matter at this point, really, but going to Bolton, we know it's going to be a tough game, obviously Ian Evatt's side, but one of the teams again that was in and around it last year, Chris, and Derby, I mean, whilst the game up there wasn't fantastic, if memory serves me right, we were well worth a point and probably could have won it. And then we played them at Pride Park in that purple patch, didn't we? And we absolutely spanked them off the park, in my opinion. And 2-0 was a bit of a flattering scoreline to Bolton, really. I thought Derby were brilliant on that day. And so, again, you know, we had a bit of the fear sort of going to London Road. We all said, you know, get away with a point would be great. What's your opinion? Has your opinions changed now? It's only one game, obviously. It was a great game, and it was we've got a 100% away record. So should we be fearing going to Bolton and, you know, giving him a bit too much respect and stuff like that? And, you know, should we look at this as, you know, we want to achieve what we want to achieve this season? We know you're going to have to go to the tougher places. It's the reason Ipswich and Plymouth got promoted last season. They went to the tougher games and they picked up the points. Perfect opportunity to, after back-to-back wins, to make it three in a row, Chris.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think the opposite to that is the reason we didn't get promoted last season was because we didn't pick any points off any of the top six, apart from probably that game you just mentioned there where we spanked Bolton at home, which, again, you could argue was one of our best performances of the season. But, yeah, I mean, I'm taking a draw. I think what we've got to be careful of here is there's been enough weird results in this league already this year to show that anybody can beat anybody. And there is no question that if we turn up, we can spank anybody in this league. There's no two ways about that. And especially now, the balance of the team is starting to look a bit better. We're starting to see, you know, the green shoots of a few partnerships in there. Cashin and Nelson, Waghorn and Washington, you know, Mendes Lang playing his proper position, just looks a bit better. And I think we've just got to be careful it's not a bit after the Lord Mayor's show. What I would say is that, and I've said this a couple of times to my friends, is I think that the way we are set up does definitely suit away games better at the moment. You know, the way that the team is set up, it massively suits away games better. You know, we're not a possession-based team. And that's hard, you know, when you've got kind of, so when you're away from home, brilliant, you know, let the other team, you know, weather the storm, pick them off on the break, take them out, and then just manage the game. Happy days, you know, especially when you know, you've taken 5,000 fans with you everywhere you go. It's brilliant. Like, but when you've got 28,000 impatient people watching you who maybe aren't kind of, you know, as, you know, kind of, well, perhaps they've not all had 4 pints before the game, and they're not on they've not been out since 11 o'clock in the morning. So perhaps not as positive thinking, shall we say? And you know, they're going there to see Derby not give the other team a kick and beat them 6-0 every single game. And obviously, in the real world, that doesn't happen. So, and when we're playing a style of football where we haven't really got the ball, you know, it's not the Steve McClaren, Liam Rossignol kind of champagne supernova football, is it? It's you know, it's all about this like high energy, fast transitions. You know, the I think Warne's kind of I don't think it's long ball. I think it's harsh when people say that, but it's definitely kind of more functional, kind of more like Klopp. I think Warne's dream is to play like Jurgen Klopp type heavy metal football, isn't it? Sort of thing. And as I say, I think that it just lends itself better to kind of you know, playing away from home or blasting people out the water at home. We saw that a couple of times last year, didn't we? Where we blew people out the water by half time, and then it's fine because then we can do what we want when we're 4-0 up. But I think when we're at home and we don't blow people out the water, and the fans get a bit impatient, and you know, you start to see the players get nervous, and the fans get nervous, and the players get nervous, then the away team all of a sudden think, "Oh, hang on a minute," you know, and people literally come down, they're going, right, quiet the crowd. Get through, you know, stay in the game till 70 minutes, we can beat Derby. And so, yeah, I mean, to answer the question directly, there's no reason we can't go up to Bolton and whip them. Absolutely no reason at all. But, you know, right here, right now, if you said to me a draw, I'm taking that every day of the week, 4 points from Bolton away and Peterborough away, happy days. And then if we can work out a way, you know, say with a bit of reinforcements, work out a way to start taking people apart at Pride Park, and then I think we're cooking.
I can't argue with anything that you've said there. I would absolutely say that you're spot on. I don't think that it is suited for away games, and I think it will change it. It'll have to change at Pride Park because, like you say, I don't think the Derby fans will allow them to play that way. If I'm honest, so they will have to. And when everybody's fit, and if they can bring in a couple of more, then they have brought in players that can play more. They can shift it around. So I think you're absolutely spot on with that. I think we probably and when was the last time we had a different system at home and away? It's been a long while. If we fell on something away, I mean, when you look actually at that purple patch last year, I mean, the teams that we played at home, they weren't anything amazing, really. But
No.
the results away that we got was because of, again, a style of football that we were playing. So Warne's home record hasn't been, I don't think, if you have, I don't know the stats. Here we go, Jack, you stato. I don't think Derby's own form, or certainly results wise under Warne, has been fantastic compared to, you know, the last five or six managers where our own form's been pretty solid, but
Carried
we
us.
Yeah,
Yeah,
we
yeah.
couldn't win it, get a point away from home. So yeah, really interesting insight. And you say about the league, I mean, we say it every year, it's a crazy league. Port Vale get dicked the first game of the season by Barnsley 7-0, and they're third or fourth, I think. They've won. It's, you know what I mean? The Port Vale. It's no disrespect
Yeah.
to Port Vale, but you know, you wouldn't. Going into going to that game on the curtain raiser and losing 7-0, you wouldn't expect yourself 4 games later to be in the top four or whatever. I know, again, it's early days, but still, points on the board. So yeah, you're right. It's crazy, and obviously Bolton, it's one of them that they are. Well, they were at the beginning of the season. They were the one of the favourites along with us. So it's how they sort of deal with, I suppose, deal with that pressure. Obviously, I think that'll affect Derby going forward. It'll be how they cope with that expectation. I mean, I'm from where Bolton were to where they ended up, and then to come back. I think they've done brilliant. I think we all said it last year. You know, a lot of praise for them. They've Ian Everett, obviously ex-Derby. He has built a decent side there. Most of them are quite young as well. They're young, they're athletic. And again, they're going to want to put the ball down on the floor. They're going to want to play. I think they're going to be very similar to Peterborough. And if Derby can hang in there and do obviously what Derby did on Saturday, hang in there and pick them off, really, then yeah, I don't see the reason why we can't come away with something. But I would agree with you, Chris. That type of an away game, you've got to hope that you're at least coming away with a point, and you know that would be satisfactory against one of the division's front runners. Jack, your opinion, or a similar question, your opinion on Saturday, Derby Bolton, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you're both bang on with the analysis of the style of play and that suiting us away from home. I mean, if you look, I was just doing some quick maths that might not be 100% right. I will check this and tweet it afterwards if it's not. But last season under Warne, it was 33 points won at home and 31 away. So not that big a difference.
When did we last have that?
Yeah, whereas if you look at Liam Rossini in those first, in his spell in charge for that first part of the season, it was 12 points at home and only two away, wasn't it? And no away goals in that time.
Yeah.
Only in top games, wasn't it? So that's been an improvement, even if the football isn't as nice to watch at times. Let's just put it that way. But yeah, I think the other thing, as well as the style of play, the other thing that suits us away from home, especially actually going to the bigger teams in the league, is what we spoke about at the end of pre-season and the concerns around Paul Warne and his style of galvanising a team. If we're away from home at quite a big ground against one of the bigger teams in the league, then he can do kind of a little bit closer to what he did at Rotherham with the, you know, with sort of, we're as close as we'll be in this league to being underdogs. You know, people, rightly or wrongly, you know, based on the squad, but based, you know, we're not necessarily favourites based on the squad, but rightly or wrongly, people back us to be based on, you know, reputation of the club. Whereas you go to somewhere like Bolton and it's, you know, you're not playing a, like Forest Green last year, where it's right, so we've got to batter them because they're Forest Green. So it's a battle, and yeah, I agree. I'd take the point. I think we may well see an unchanged lineup again as well. I wouldn't be surprised unless somebody comes in. I don't think we'll see really any changes, because this, you know, it's showing early signs of clicking. I mean, on Saturday, as Chris said, we saw green shoots, and you know they want to kind of water them in training this week, give them some sunlight, and hope that they blossom over the next few weeks.
What an analogy that is! Very nice there, Jack. But I would agree. Yeah, I think unless injuries, I think it'd be damn harsh to drop anybody from a 4-2 away victory. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Final point on the podcast, obviously, Jack. We mention the women's defeat yesterday in the League Cup against West Brom. 4-2 in the end. I believe Amy Sims got on the score sheet. Obviously, we heard from when we did the season preview last week. Obviously, I must admit I didn't catch it, but what did you think of the game?
It was, so if you go back to the opening day against Wolves, there were, you know, they lost that 2-1, but there were plenty of positives. You know, Sam Griffiths said after the game, the second half was where she wanted Derby to be at. And then you look at yesterday, it was a chance to bounce back against the West Brom side, who they beat 5-0 on the last day of last season. Started well. 13 minutes in, Amy Sims got the opening goal, square pass from Eleanor Ashton. Lead short-lived, though, straight from kick-off. You have West Brom, close-range header. And then they got two more before half-time. There were a few changes at the break, and we got one back, but it was then, you know, so pushing for an equaliser, hoping to make it 3-3. West Brom hit them on the counter, 10 minutes to play. Charlotte Steggles gives away a penalty, and that killed the game off. So not great, but there's, again, you know, a couple of goals there. They seem decent going forward from what I've seen. I think it's just, again, not as many as last year, but there are still a few new players, and it's all about adapting. And I mean, Wolves last week, absolutely, I am not at all concerned. If you look at their form last season, where they're predicted to, you know, the sorts of, you know, predicted to finish towards the top of the league, what they did yesterday, West Brom, a little bit more disappointing, but I still think, you know, this is a young squad. A lot of the players who've come in are young. We saw a debut for Rebecca May, who came in from Manchester United in the week. But Sam Griffiths is an excellent coach. She's putting together a good team, and over the course of the season, I still think we'll pull through and get a good finish. Yeah, going out of the League Cup this early is not ideal, but the old cliche, you concentrate on the league, right? That's the positive spin from it. But yeah, so on Sunday, it's a double header of away days up north for Derby men and women in Northwest. They've got Liverpool Feds, the women's team, so in a somewhat similar direction on Sunday. That'll be a 2 o'clock kickoff. And yeah, Liverpool Feds, they beat last season, I think, both times. So that they should be confident going into that. They did lose, as I say, they had a thumping win over West Brom's final day last year, but cast your mind back to what, November last year, that was a difficult game at the Hawthorns. So come up against two decent sides so far, and yeah, I'm not concerned. I think they'll pull through. And there's, again, we're talking about these green shoots. They're there at the Don Amos Arena, or at, Moor Farm, however you want to put it. And I think, yeah, we're looking at an exciting season on that front too. And I'll keep updated on that, and hopefully get some games and be able to bring you some better analysis than this.
No, that was all right. That was all right, Jack. No, that's fine. So, to sum up the podcast, then 4-2 results for both. Unfortunately, the men's was more positive than the women's, and obviously, we're both obviously looking for sort of a busy transfer window. I'd like to see a few more people come in, certainly for the men's, and then obviously both teams in that northwest part of England, and hopefully both teams can come back with some results. And that is it for this week's podcast. As I say, unless there's an absolute massive transfer storm that happens, we might slip another one in before Bolton as a bit of a bonus episode. If not, obviously it'll be next week, where we'll have all the transfer roundup. We'll look at Bolton in more detail. Then, of course, they've gone and cancelled the game at Pride Park against Northampton because of international call-up. So it'll be a free week on the podcast, but we have got a Rams Review Meet episode lined up. I'm not going to spoil who it is just yet, but keep an eye out on Twitter for nods on that, and that will be out in, well, probably the day of the what would have been the Northampton game, where Curry sat down with an ex-Derby player. But as always, thank you very much to my guests, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on again, mate. Thank you very much.
Yeah, cheers, Jason. Yeah, anytime, mate.
And Jack, thank you very much as well.
Thank you. We'll speak soon, I'm sure.
We will. And until next time, up the Rams. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review podcast. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to get in touch, we're on Twitter at Rams Review 1. Our Facebook is Rams Review Podcast. Or you can drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, up the Rams.